Welcome, Lisa.
Welcome to you. Thank you for having me.
I want to know, I'm enjoying your book so much. What was happening in your life that gave you the impetus and the courage to travel solo across the world to a remote place like Bhutan?
Well, you know what happens when you sort of reach the bottom and you kind of doesn't matter what presents itself, you'll just sort of take the lifeline out. That's sort of where I was. I was really worried about being in my 40s. I didn't see a future for myself in my profession, in my personal life. I just didn't know what was next. And then I just met this cute guy at a party who presented this opportunity to me to go to this exotic place. And I didn't even think about whether it was scary or practical. I just sort of went because I was just so excited to have a way out of what my day-to-day was like at the time.
So for readers who don't yet know, where exactly is Bhutan and how the heck do you get there?
That's good. Okay, so Bhutan is in the Himalayas. It's surrounded by Nepal and India and Tibet. So it's in a very populous part of the world, but it's a very tiny country. It's about the size of Switzerland. And to get there, you have to go basically either to Delhi, New Delhi, or Bangkok. And then you take a local airline. The only airline that flies into Bhutan is their national airline for another 4-hour trip or so. And then you have to drive for a couple of hours, or at least you did back then, to the capital city, which is where I was staying the first time I went.
So would you encourage intrepid travelers to visit there today?
Well, you know, it's a wonderful place to visit as a tourist. And if you are an experienced tourist and a tolerant tourist and an adventurous one, it's a fantastic place to go. It costs a lot of money to go there. I didn't pay this because I was volunteering, but if you go there to as a tourist, you have to pay, it's up to $250 a day per person,
wow,
minimum. So it's not cheap. And it's not easy to get there if you're coming from the United States. But if you want to see something that's unspoiled, unlike anywhere you've ever been before, Bhutan is it. It's a Buddhist country. And so it's steeped in Buddhist tradition, very colorful, bright, just a magnificent place.
Okay, in the book, you mentioned that in 1999, the king, and I'll try not to mispronounce his name, correct me, Jigme Singye Wangchuck.
You got it.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
Okay, after years of self-imposed isolation, he decided to allow TV and the internet into the country. What was his impetus for doing so at that time?
Well, it's not really clear because he's never said for sure. I mean, you can read the speech that he gave, but that doesn't even really spell it out. But what people surmise is that he saw that the world was, he had allowed tourists in the 70s. Tourists didn't even come to Bhutan until the 70s. So as this steady drip of tourism was coming in, and as he was allowing more people to go out to study, he saw that he couldn't cordon off the world himself from the world any longer. And he hoped that the people, he says in his speech where he announced that these things would be available, would tread the middle path, which is a very Buddhist philosophy. You know, no extremes, just sort of trusting yourself to follow the middle path and just be deliberate and measured about how you use television. What he didn't factor in was how much people would love television and fall in love with the consumer culture and just the outside world. Hmm. So it's not really entirely clear why he did it, but I think he saw the writing was on the wall. And certainly if you look at other countries right now that are going through so much turmoil, where they've tried to restrict access to these kinds of modern tools, it creates problems. So he probably just trusted people to, you know, understand it.
All right. So you worked, volunteered at Radio Kuzu. Kuzu. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that Kuzu means something in Bhutan?
Yes. Kuzu is short for Kuzu Zampo La, which is hello in Dzongkha. So think about it as hello FM.
Oh, all right. And is Dzongkha the language that they speak and not called Bhutanese or?
It's not called Bhutanese. Dzongkha is the native tongue. And that's the name of the language, which is apparently derivative of Tibetan. Dzongkha is Azong is the fortress that happened that is built in each district. These majestic, magnificent fortresses are built in each district in Bhutan. And so Dzongkha is language of the Dzongs.
Ah. All right. So you've been traveling there. You've been there 6 times now over the last 4 years.
Yes.
What changes have you seen, and are they for the better, or what's your view on that?
Well, it would be my opinion to say that it's not necessarily for the better. But of course, I didn't grow up in a country that didn't have roads or hard currency or electricity until the 70s. So it's easy for me to say that it's scary when I go back there now and see twice as many cars as there ever used to be. Literally, there are up to 40,000 cars in the country, whereas there were only half that 5 years ago. You know, it's easy for me to say that I don't like to see these sophisticated commercials coming on television because they signify that people are more interested in consumer culture. Well, it's easy for me to say I don't like consumer culture because I grew up here in the United States with it, but I can see how if I hadn't grown up with it, I would be very enamored of the idea of being able to buy things and, you know, make my home look prettier. But it's a strange transition to see Bhutan become more sophisticated. There are more banks than ever before. There are coffee shops where there weren't coffee shops before. And yeah, coffee shops are great. That means maybe you'll go sit with your friends and drink some coffee, right? But if you think about the underlying fundamentals of that, that means that you're not necessarily gathering at home anymore if you're going out for coffee. And why are you not gathering at home? Well, because home is becoming less of a place that it used to be in Bhutan, which was sort of the focal point for everyone, for multi-generations. You know, if you and I were sisters, we lived together, we'd live with our husbands, our kids, our extended families would all be under one roof. And if your friend came by to see you, she was probably my friend too, and we would hang out if you weren't around. So that kind of nice pace of culture that existed in Bhutan is being replaced by the busyness factor that we have here that isolates so many of us, even in the busiest of cities. It's a tough change to see.
I wanted to ask you, what's the population of Bhutan?
Sorry, yeah. The population in this country the size of Switzerland is about 650,000 people. So it's not populous at all. But the capital city where I've spent most of my time while I've been in Bhutan is growing rapidly. It's now up to about 100,000 people. From 15 years ago, it had about 15 or 20,000 people in it. So it's explosive growth. And it's, you know, all the attendant changes that come when the city grows so quickly.
So in each of your visits there, about how long was each visit?
Anywhere from 2 weeks to 2.5 months. So each visit was very different. The first time I went was for 6 weeks. And the basis of my book is on the first 2 or 3 visits that I made there. But so I've spent varying degrees of time there, and I've spent a lot of time with Bhutanese people here in the U.S., and I also, I've really immersed myself in Bhutanese history, not that, you know, anybody can ever accurately write another place's history well, especially a place as mysterious as this, but it's been a real pleasure for me to immerse myself in the very limited number of resources there are about Bhutan's history. Well, over the last 4 years.
Can you share one or two favorite memories of your first or second visit there?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, my favorite memory opens the book that I wrote is when I visited this place called Tiger's Nest, which is a very sacred monastery in Bhutan. It's said to be the place where Buddhism was brought to Bhutan in the 16th century. And I'm sorry, in the 8th century. And I walked up to Topsang, Tiger's Nest, this magnificent monastery, with a group of people from the radio station and a couple of other expats who were also there volunteering for different, one was a nurse and one was a golf pro, oddly enough. And we all walked up as a group to this magnificent place. And you know, it was a magical day. It was a beautiful, crisp, cold day. But what was so memorable about it was that all of us were so different. You know, we ranged in age from 20 to 60, and we all had very different backgrounds, but we were all together united on this trek, and we really, it kind of put in perspective anything I felt about where I was in my life, the sorrow I felt about not having certain things, the loss I felt in my life from love, and just this feeling of not uncertainty about what I was going to do with the rest of my life just melted away while I was walking up to this monastery. And that was a memory that sticks with me today, even. It was just such a humbling and wonderful experience to see this place through the eyes of these locals and these other older expats, and all of us together, united, was a really beautiful memory.
Oh, tell us about your philanthropic project for Bhutan.
Oh, thank you for asking about that. So I've been, ever since I've been going to Bhutan, I've been looking for ways to give back. And a lot of the visitors who go to Bhutan are very wealthy, so they can, you know, build kitchens on the sides of monasteries when they need them, or sponsor kids to go to private school here in the U.S. And my means are not quite that grand. So I've sent a couple of kids to school in Bhutan, and then I found, and that was interesting, but there isn't a real mechanism for giving that way. So what I've been doing is working with this new nonprofit to Bhutan called Read Global, and it's an initiative of the Bill Gates Foundation. And I'm working with some friends to raise $50,000 to build a library in the eastern part of Bhutan. There aren't very many libraries there. So it's very exciting that this organization has come in and is starting to build them in places where kids are just hungry for knowledge and a community gathering place, but have never had them before. So Read Global is the organization that I'm working to help support. I don't want to start a nonprofit. I don't have the mechanism to do that, but I can certainly help funnel awareness to people who are interested in that by sending them to bookstobhutan.com.
All right. Well, Lise, I really enjoyed your book. I stayed up late reading it. It's such an easy but, you know, meaningful read. Thanks very much, and thanks for being a guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.